This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Coming up in about 24 minutes, pal Grant Paulson going to join the program, host of Grant and Danny, weekdays 2 to 6:30 right here on The Fan. You're tapped in. The youngest of Charles and O. Willingham. I'll take you up at 10 o'clock here on this Friday night edition of Overtime. A lot more to get to. Talk a little bit of Terps basketball. We'll take a spin around the NFL. A lot more to get to. It was a busy week. Both here locally in the DMV area and then nationally across pro sports as well. A couple of sound bites I want to play before we get out of here. LeBron James last night sounding off on why Anthony Edwards shouldn't want to be the face of the league, I thought was really good commentary. Shedeur Sanders today at the podium I thought was super interesting. Right now, though, I want to get to Commanders head coach Dan Quinn. And DQ still kind of feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong here, it feels like we're still kind of learning who he is, right? Like, I think we all know when he says, let's get it rocking, that means it's time for the media to start asking questions. We know that much about him. We know he likes to wear backwards hats. We know he has an affinity for going for it on fourth down. But with DQ, man, I think how he views this roster internally, I think, is him and AP. How those guys view the roster, I think, really is going to color their thought process this offseason and then in turn their decision-making coming up this offseason. And I gotta feel like if you're Washington, you feel good about yourself coming out of last year. The question is, can you have discernment? Can you be open, honest, and objective about where you are as a franchise? Because if you're open and honest about where you are, I think you make your decision-making this offseason, this time around, more justifiable, right? I know they're not really trying to explain things to folks and give reason for their moves. They just go out and make moves. But when it comes to next year's team, like we've kind of been laying out here, there are super difficult decisions that have to be made. When you're talking about next year's Commanders, there are super tough decisions that have to ultimately be made. And like we said at the start of the show, Adam Peters, that blue-eyed handsome devil, it ain't an easy job he's got, man. Not every move that AP makes this offseason, people are going to resonate with. Not every move that AP makes this offseason, people are going to agree with. But what's my old slogan? Until he proves otherwise, that he's not deserving of this, it's very easy for me. We're at the mercy of the evaluator. Whatever AP says goes. I know you were talking about NBA Youngboy earlier, right, Ben Strober? If you like NBA Youngboy, you must like Lil Baby, I guess. You know the old slogan that Young Thug was tweeting from. Was he in jail still while he was tweeting this? Whatever Wham says go. Whatever Wham say go. I don't know if you're familiar with that line. Whatever AP says goes. That's how I'm moving.
I like that analogy.
Whatever Wham say go. Whatever AP says go. That's how I'm moving this offseason when it comes to the Washington Commanders.
Me too.
I think as we get geared up for this year, there are tough decisions like I keep laying out. To me, the toughest decision that Washington's going to have to make, two of the tougher decisions, that Washington's going to have to make is whether or not they keep Brandon Coleman at left tackle and whether or not they keep Mikey Sainristil still at outside corner. Because let's be real here, right? When Washington, and I guess it's different between Mikey and Brandon, because when they drafted Mikey Sainristil, it was pretty much thought that, yeah, he's going to play primarily in the slot. And there wasn't much discussion about him playing elsewhere either. With Brandon Coleman, the moment he was drafted, that's the conversation we were having. Well, is he a guard or is he a tackle? Is he a guard or is he a tackle? And I think we found out throughout the duration of last year that the answer is probably somewhere right in the middle. He's probably a guard and a tackle. Now, obviously, I'm being facetious when I say that. But when I look at Mikey Sainristil and Brandon Coleman, I think you can make the argument both ways. Like, if you wanted to approach me and say, you know what, Linnell, like, I'm probably going to leave Brandon Coleman at tackle. If you approach me with that logic and that thought process, I'd have to be like, you know what? I can hear that. Because here's the thing about Brandon Coleman. Let's look at Brandon Coleman by the numbers here real quick. Last year, his PFF grade was a 64 at tackle. That ranked 59th amongst 141 qualifying players. So not very good. Pass blocking grade, 64.8. That ranked 72nd out of 141 eligible players. Holy cow. Completely off topic. Don't do this, Ben, when you're in the chair. Host Shohei Ohtani, first at bat, home run in spring training.
That's wow, shocker.
Shocker, right? It's just what happens nowadays. With the
Soto homered versus the Nats. That ruined my day, but that's way off topic.
But we go from that to this. Brandon Coleman and his PFF grades lead you to believe that, maybe he wasn't that good at tackle. But like I said earlier in the show, I don't view Pro Football Focus as like the judge, jury, and executioner when it comes to a player. The eye test in combination with Brandon Coleman's PFF grade lead me to believe there's a discussion to be had when it comes to kicking him inside the guard. To Brandon Coleman's credit, though, down the stretch last year, he was dealing with a shoulder injury, a knee injury, a calf injury. He was banged up. So I get it. Maybe his play wasn't as good as it should have been. But here's the other thing, right, when it comes to Brandon Coleman. Think about the edge rushers he had to go against. Myles Garrett, Kayvon Thibodeau, Brian Burns, Micah Parsons, Josh Sweat, Yaya Diaby out in Tampa Bay. Like, they went against some really good pass rushers this year. And he, for the most part, it felt like, right, was able to hold his own a little bit. And for that reason, I go, should you just let him fail at tackle? Because I think right now, if you went into next year with him as your starting left tackle, like, I wouldn't be sounding the alarm. That's how I would put it. He proved that he is a quality starting tackle in this league, I think.
I think he showed signs of being quality as a tackle, but I think he showed signs of being great as a guard.
Yeah.
because of the way he plays, the way what he wants to do, he's strong as an ox.
If he gets his hands on you, it's
over. If Brandon Coleman gets his hands on you, you're out of the play. However, I just don't think he moves too great with his feet. I know the injury was also part of the problem. If you go and watch the All-22 from maybe the first 8 weeks of the season through the final eight or nine, whatever games of the regular season, he wasn't moving the same. Yeah. If you move him inside of the guard, I know that's going to be something that's difficult to do given free agency situation and what we talked about in the last segment with the Rams signing. But if you get him on that inside position of the guard, that gives him more of an opportunity, I think, for him to get his hands on guys and take him out of the play. But he did show signs of, you know, showing flashes as playing left tackle, which is so hard to do in the National Football League, especially for a guy that didn't even do it in college.
It's going to be interesting, man. 1-800-636-1067. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, ESPN draft analyst Jordan Reed gave his thoughts on whether or not the Commanders should leave Brandon Coleman at tackle. Let's hear from Jordan Reed, plus Commanders head coach Dan Quinn next here on The Fan.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby.
If you enjoy football, football,
be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys. New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday.
Subscribe on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
A lot more to get to here on this Friday night edition of Overtime. You're riding with the YIC, Linnell Willingham, and I take you up to 10 o'clock. Grant Paulson, get ready to join us coming up in about 10 minutes or so. But right now, I want to continue our conversation that we're having about two Commander rookies that really proved to be foundational
culture-setting building blocks moving forward, no matter what position they play. We're talking about Brandon Coleman and Mikey Sainristil still, and the question that I'm chewing on right now is, if you're Washington, do you leave Brandon Coleman at tackle, or do you kick him inside the guard? And for Mikey Sainristil still, do you leave him at outside corner or kick him back inside to the slot cornerback spot? Our guy Jordan Reed, NFL draft analyst for ESPN, had this to say about Brandon Coleman and what position he should be playing entering year number two in the NFL.
Well, Jaden Daniels obviously was the best rookie, but I think the biggest surprise to me personally was Coleman holding up at left tackle his rookie year, just because we were having this debate after the draft was, are they really going to start a rookie at left tackle? And they ended up throwing him out there, and he did pretty well for the most part. So, I mean, if he continues to play well, why not leave him at that spot? Just because I always have the debate of, is this guy a tackle or is he a guard? If you're having that debate, I've always had the feeling that let them fail or show them that they can't play tackle first before you move them inside, just because tackles are obviously a premium position. So him playing so well at that left tackle spot, I see no reason to move him.
It's Jordan Reed. This is where things get interesting, right? Because I guess I agree with the thought process of Jordan Reed. I don't know if I necessarily agree with the analysis. Brandon Coleman failed at times last year at tackle. I saw him fail at tackle. But I get what Jordan is saying, right? It's got to look bad more than it looks good to switch him. And I think, you know, overall I can agree with that thought process and those sentiments. But, like, the reality of the situation is this. If you can upgrade, or let me backtrack. You are moving Coleman from tackle to guard to upgrade the guard spot. It's not an indictment on Coleman as a tackle necessarily. It's more so, hey, I think you can really help us out at guard, and I think I can go find another tackle. But I guess, and I'll be honest here, right? I'm a man first. I always say it here. I'm going to admit when I sound stupid and dumb. That was dumb of me. Because what's harder to find, a tackle or a guard? A tackle. So if you've already got a tackle, leave him there. But my thought process is, and I don't know if you have a tackle there. We mentioned Brandon Coleman. Mikey Sainristil still was another interesting case study in year number one. Obviously, he starts the first game of the season as the nickel corner. The first two games of the season, rather, as the nickel corner for the Washington Commanders. In a week number three, they move him to outside corner with Benjamin St. Juiced, and Noah Igbinoghene comes off the bench and plays in the slot. Noah played his ass off last year for the Washington Commanders. I really do believe that. But last year, when Mikey Sainristil was drafted, the thought was he was going to be this team's long-term answer at the slot corner spot. Well, they bumped him to outside corner, and the grades went this way. Finished third in total tackles. Is this via PFF or is this in the NFL? We'll ignore that stat. The overall grade, right? 66.1, 77th out of 223 corners. The run defense grade, 69.5. That was 55th. Out of 223 corners, the coverage grade, 84th out of 223 guys. There was a point in time this season where Mikey Sainristil still was leading the NFL in touchdowns given up. I think it was at like the week 6 or week 7 point. So it wasn't perfect at outside corner for Mikey Sainristil still. If I'm Washington, I'm probably looking to move him back inside. I think your run defense gets better with him being inside. And I think your defense is just better as a whole. You can blitz him, all types of things you can do. So I'm probably going to move Mikey inside. Who cares what I think, though, right? We care about what the head coach of the Washington Commanders thinks. Dan Quinn, he was out in Indianapolis at the scouting combine this week and had this to say about the potential of moving Brandon Coleman inside to guard and Mikey Sainristil still inside to the nickel corner spot.
I think I'll keep fresh eyes to see what's the best way for us to play. Nice part, these are guys that are versatile. you know, that can do more than one job. And if I didn't feel that way, I would say absolutely yes. I want to make sure I'm clear on that. I've got a lot of faith in them in those spots. But adding value and the ability to move them if you needed to, that's a big part of our game. And I have a lot of trust in them and a number of guys in this class that when called upon, they know the power of versatility. We talk about it a lot, and not just for those two, but for others as well.
Commanders head coach Dan Quinn. Take a quick time out. When we come back, Grant Paulson joins the program next. We'll ask him the same question. If you're Washington heading into next year, are you keeping Brandon Coleman at tackle, or are you kicking him inside the guard? It's next on The Fan. Still rocking and rolling here on this Friday night edition of Overtime. It's the Youngest in Charles and L. Willingham taking you up to 10 o'clock. Plenty more to get to. We'll let you hear from Shedeur Sanders in his podium session out in Indy this morning at the Combine. Let's just say the Sanders son at quarterback does not lack confidence at all. I was saying this earlier, man. And Ben, I don't know if you heard me going on my rant about this. I went into this week as like this Shedeur Sanders backer and truther after hearing him talk today and then a rumor coming out of the combine that he hasn't done well on the whiteboard when meeting with teams. If you aren't going to do good on the whiteboard, what the hell are you going to be good at? Right now, we go out to the Rude Guest Hotline where we find one of my absolute favorites talking all things burgundy and gold, our pal Paulson, Grant GP. What's going on, my brother? How you doing?
What's up, Linnell? How are you, pal?
I'm good, man. Always love to catch up with you at certain points throughout the offseason to check your temperature because I know the takes from you can be a little spicy at times. You're just telling it how T.I. is, right, GP? Giving the people what they want. Before we get into any Commanders foosball, it is 8:32 at night. I am bothering you on a Friday night. The least I can do is check in on the palate for tonight. What did you eat for dinner, my friend?
You know what? We had a late lunch. I had the kids come to work with me today, remember?
Okay. I didn't see them when I was in. Okay.
Yeah, so we scooped lunch with the kids, took them out because of that. Didn't really do much in that way. I had like these, paleo type meat things, Kevin's they're called, from Costco that you can throw in a pan and heat up. So it's, if you call that a dinner, that'll probably be the play. But you know, you do the late lunch, it tides you over.
For sure. For sure. Let's get into the X's and O's. We were talking about right before we brought you on was the idea of potentially kicking Brandon Coleman inside to guard and then kicking Mikey Sainristil inside to slot corner. From your vantage point, before you even answer the question, GP, your thoughts on the way both of those two guys played last year?
I thought Sainristil was fantastic. He's physical and just willing, and he's a dude. I mean, right away, I think he kind of showed why Washington was in love with his game. People forget, too, he started as a receiver in school, so he's got some ball tracking ability. I think he showed that occasionally. We could get his hands on the football, but everyone's got to remember, too, as adequately as he played and at times as much as he impressed, he was out of position, right? As you said, he was drafted to play the nickel. That's what they think his game is, his skill set is. It's what he did a lot of at Michigan. And they had him playing out on the boundary, which was not supposed to be the ask. Yeah. It kind of happened out of necessity where maybe it wasn't what was best for his development, but he was the best on the roster at it of the guys that they had until Lattimore was healthy. And then the thought was Lattimore would be your one and he'd be your two. But even after Lattimore got healthy, as he was chasing his tail and struggling, you know, you can make the case that Mikey Sainristil, as much as he had some plays he wanted back, which is normal as a rookie, was their best guy at the position last year. So feel good about him. As far as Coleman goes, a little bit more of a mixed bag. I thought he did some things really well. Third-round pick, obviously. And so when you draft a guy there and he ends up starting pretty quickly into the season at left tackle, that's a win. That's rare. But you got to expect undulations, and I think there's going to be some peaks and valleys. So everyone's grading him, and you should, against, you know, what it looks like when an all-pro's doing it or when a stalwart's doing it. And I think if you're grading them on that standard, it was probably right around average, you know, maybe a tick below average when he had bad games. But if you're grading him on the scale of, you know, a third-round pick who played a lot of guard in college who they thought could play tackle, and then you got that season out of him on the left side, I think that's an A. So it's kind of a matter of perspective and how they want to view it. Do they view him as an ascending, you know, prospect who's only going to get better and linearly this year is going to play at a higher level, which I do, then I think you could probably move forward with him at left tackle and see where that goes next year. I bet they will. If they view him as, you know, having, for whatever reason, when they watch the film, mm-hmm. proven that he can't do it, and I'd have a hard time believing that, then maybe you feel like you just got an ace that you kick inside the guard, to your point. But I think he'll be the week one left tackle. I'd be surprised if he isn't.
Okay.
And I think Sanra's still probably. They'd like to kick inside to the nickel, and that means they got to go get another starting corner with Lattimore, which I think they will.
Yeah, to your point, right, with both of these guys, whether they stay at the positions they played as rookies or they move to more favorable spots, I think we could both agree they are two foundational culture-setting type of building block pieces here moving forward. Like, both of those two guys embody what it means to be a Commander. Same as still with the toughness, Coleman with the toughness as well. One thing we don't talk about a lot, GP, down the stretch, and I know everyone's banged up at the end of the year, but Coleman was dealing with a shoulder injury, a knee injury, all while going up against the premier pass rushers in the NFL. If you're not going to kick Coleman inside the guard, GP, are you addressing the interior of your offensive line via free agency or the draft? And then, like, a two-parter for you, if you were this Commander staff, are you trying your hardest to upgrade from Nick Allegretti, or do you think you can kind of run it back with him?
I think you got to add two new starters on the offensive line, probably.
Yeah.
What I would like to see them do, if they could figure it out, is get better at right tackle, where they currently have Andrew Wiley. And you could either cut Wiley and take the dead money, mm-hmm. And still you would save some money against the cap, or you could keep him around. It's not like he makes a ton of money, so he could become your swing tackle. Remember Cornelius Lucas, mm-hmm. who I actually think has played at a high level and probably been every bit as good or maybe even better than Wiley at tackle when he's gotten a chance to go. You know, he's a free agent, and maybe he either gets money elsewhere, or because you've already paid Wiley, if you wanted to keep him around as a swing tackle, you just let Cornelius Lucas walk, if that's the case. But I think right tackle would be a spot that I would address, but you asked about the interior, mm-hmm. and you absolutely have to add another piece there.
Yeah.
They were fine along the offensive line for last season. You don't want to be fine with a young star quarterback, right? You want to be really good. Look at the Eagles, who just won a Super Bowl with one of the best offensive lines of the National Football League. And frankly, look at their defensive line, right, where that's what you're going up against twice a year. That's who you're chasing in the division. That's who you're likely going to have to overcome in the playoffs as the best team in the conference. You know, teams are really starting to beef up their interior. They're trying to rush the passer from the inside out, push the pocket and collapse and create penetration and havoc. And I think teams have to adjust, whereas there was a time when I was on the beat a decade or so ago, and the guard position was one of the least important in football. And you've seen now the money getting spent at guard has completely changed, right? So I look at guard right now, and I see Cosme, who's not going to be ready at the start of the year almost certainly. He got hurt on January 18th against the Lions, tore his ACL.
Yeah.
If he's back in October, I think that's a real big win. But let's say it's, you know, 7-8 weeks into the year, which is about a 9-month recovery. You're still talking about him possibly missing 2 months.
Right.
So you got a question at right guard. At left guard, Allegretti was okay and gave you some guts and guile and leadership and was a veteran. I think he could still serve as a great locker room presence and be your third guard, so to speak. But you know, can you add two starters with Cosme likely out? Probably not. So maybe you need, you know, Allegretti to start early in the year. You go out and get a starting guard who slots in where Cosme would be. And then when Cosme's healthy and comes back, maybe that guy kicks back over to the left side, and Allegretti is the first guard up, you know, as a backup. The one place I think you put in Sharpie is Biotish at center.
Yes.
You don't have any questions there. But otherwise, there's some flexibility, multiplicity with the different positions and some of the like guys like Coleman or Wiley can play multiple spots. But I think they've got to try to add two real quality, legitimate starters to just take their O-line from being – passable, you know, good, solid, whatever you want to say, to stellar. And I think that should be the goal,
right,
as long as Daniels is on this rookie deal. And the last thing I'll say really quickly, mm-hmm. is just they couldn't run the ball at the end of last year.
Nope.
And I know Brian Robinson really struggled, and I want to upgrade it at RB1, but that having been said, it wasn't just him. I mean, Eckler, you name it, their running back position was averaging about 2 yards a carry for a month down the stretch. They didn't. Their run blocking grade was bottom 5 or 6 in the NFL for much of the end of last season via PFF and some other sites. So that's something they've got to sort out.
Yeah, for sure. And Grant, the big like kind of cloud, I don't want to call it a cloud because that makes it seem like a negative thing, but the big talking point locally, nationally, when it comes to this team in this offseason in particular is, oh, you've got the third most cap room in the NFL. You've got a full allotment of draft picks. We expect this group to be aggressive with a really good young quarterback on the rookie contract. I'll put it to you like this, GP. What does being aggressive look like for the 2025 Commanders this offseason?
So this is one of my favorite questions, right? And this is something that I think is so important because this always happens where, you know, a week or two into the offseason, or I should say into free agency, they've signed a bunch of guys and people say, see, I told you they were going to be aggressive. And quantity is not the point with aggressiveness. Quality is.
Yeah.
Okay? They have 27 free agents right now. Now, I personally think they're going to re-sign half or so, maybe even more than that, of those guys. Because we're talking about mostly, you know, one-year veteran types, many of whom are not going to break the bank, a lot of whom don't have a ton of options or wouldn't make a lot of money on the open market. And with this, you know, use the brotherhood bell that I like to ding, but with this locker room chemistry and the love affair and the organization right now that we all are so enamored with the way they operate and the improved PA rankings, you know, guys aren't trying to get out of here like they have in the past. So I think you could probably get a bunch of guys back on 1 or 2 year deals. But for the moment, you got 27 free agents. So that means they're going to have to sign a lot of players.
Right.
I mean, you got to field 53. So we're talking about almost 30 guys now, whether it's re-signing their own guys. Well, when the market opens, that still counts. They'll have a handful of them already re-signed, I'm sure, before free agency. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you bring back on the day three of free agency, I'll just say Alameda Zaccheaus for a one-year deal at $3 million or whatever, that counts as a free agent addition.
Right.
There's going to be a lot of those, right, from inside and outside the org. But when you say aggressiveness, what you're talking about, I think, and I know what I'm talking about, is big game hunting.
Yes.
I'm talking about putting my hook in the lake to catch a real big fish.
Yeah.
So do I think they're going to do what I would always prefer and want? Not necessarily. Like, I'm in the market to go trade for Myles Garrett.
Yeah.
I am interested in signing a couple of real stars. Based on last offseason, I don't think that's what this group wants to do. But to me, that's what aggressiveness is. Aggressiveness is going big, swinging for the fences, and really going big game hunting. What they'll do is they're going to sign a lot of guys, in my opinion, and they're looking for fits. And look, it worked last year. It was an amazing offseason.
But Grant, do you
think they got to the NFC title game?
Do you think last year, and I've asked this question on air to the listeners, we've done a bunch of calls on this, as good as last year's offseason was, let me put it in perspective for you. When you think about the contributors, the key contributors, why they made it to the conference title game, it's Jayden Daniels and your cast of free agents. When I put it in that context, last year in the offseason success, it's not replicable, is it?
No, but you're asking, like, what do they do? And mm-hmm. if you drive home when you're tired, okay,
mm-hmm.
and you nod off a couple of times just, like, real quick, and you're like, oh, I got – you start, like, putting your window down. You do all the stuff to get home, and you get in your driveway, and you park your car, and you're like, all right, I got home, no problem.
Right.
You didn't hit anything. You didn't crash. You might do it again, but that doesn't mean you should, right? Like, what – they got the car parked, and
right.
it worked really well. My guess is they run it back that way. Do I think that is a replicable, process that should be operated that way every single year? No, I don't necessarily. But I think when you do that in your first ever year running the show and you get rave reviews, I mean, we're talking 4 wins to 14 wins. We're talking picking second to the NFC championship game. Like, you really can't have a renaissance that big year over year. It's amazing what they did. They're going to go back to the well to some extent on that process and say, Jayden Daniels can make our, one-year veteran free agent wide receiver like Zacchaeus, who caught 10 balls in Philly last year and had a 8-catch, 2-touchdown game for them this year. He can make those guys better. You know, he can make our Nick Allegretti offensive line addition, who's a tweener starter backup with the Chiefs, he can elevate him. It worked last year. My fear is they kind of run it back to an extent with quantity over quality. And a lot of these one-year type deals and kind of kick the can down the road again.
It's going to make for a very interesting next couple of off seasons. How often do they keep going back to that well, and when do they try to really build out the base of this roster? I'll let you go on this, my friend. I appreciate you.
Well, I'll just say real quick on that. Uh-huh. I think what they would say to you is the roster is going to be built year over year via the draft. So, like, if you do that plan in free agency three times, right, in their mind, they've made 20 picks, and it's probably the over on that, but let's say 23 draft picks. And if you hit on 16 of them, well, now you've built out your roster, right? And that's going to be like their philosophy.
And Hit looks comes in all shapes and sizes, right? Hit could be a primary backup. A Hit could be, you know, right, okay.
But to that point, okay, if you're doing it that way, then you got to hit, right? So Ben Sinnott in the second round can't catch 5 balls as a rookie and not be utilized. Now, I have some hope for him because I thought he had a really good preseason. I thought he showed a lot, and I think maybe he just didn't play because it's more of, you know, how they used Ertz and it didn't really work out, then he can't play. But, you know, you can't have Luke McCaffrey, a wide receiver you take in the top 100, basically phased out down the stretch not playing other than on kick returns, and Ben Sinnott on the bench watching. You know, those are two of your top few picks that you took in the top 100. I mean, if you're going to build through the draft, the batting average has to be really high. And to Adam Peters' credit, I thought this year's draft is a smashola, obviously. When you get Jaden Daniels, we were talking about Coleman. If he's a left tackle, that's a massive win. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's you're not going to bat 1,000, but you also, when you take a receiver in the third round, he's got to help you.
Yes.
When you take a tight end in the second round, I still think both of those things are going to happen. But if at the end of next year we're talking and it doesn't look like McCaffrey or Sinnott are real contributors, you know, that's a different conversation now.
Yes, it is. I'll let you go on this, GP. Speaking of the draft, if I had to inject you with truth serum, Doc Walker style, here on the last night of February, do you think they stick and pick at 29, or do you think it's a trade back operation?
I think they stick and pick. Honestly, yeah. I mean, I could even see them going back. I think that's a really good range to go back generally. You see that a lot of times with the contending teams at the end of round one. You know, the only reason you wouldn't want to do that is because you get the extra year on a rookie contract.
Right.
But if you're taking, you know, certain positions, that may not matter as much, right? So I guess it depends on what they want to do. I think if you're taking an edge, you probably would rather take a guy at 29 than at 35 and get that fifth year because the money is so huge. When they get paid their second deal. Corners, not quite the same way. You know, certainly if you went running back there, which I don't think they would, you know, wouldn't be as much of a consideration. But I think free agency will answer the question for us as to where they go.
Yeah,
but I would say they either make the pick or go back. I'd be surprised if they went up unless, I mean, they just completely fell in love with somebody.
Real quick, one-word answer. Is there a position at 29 that would make you roll your eyes if they picked it? Kicker and punter obviously excluded.
Yeah. No.
Wow.
I would say no.
Okay.
I mean, quarterback. Does that count?
For sure. For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Jeeps, appreciate you as always, my brother. Enjoy the weekend, man. We'll see you next week.
All right. See you, brother. Take
that
care.
That is Grant Paulson, one of the absolute best, talking all things burgundy and gold. Make sure you check him out Monday through Friday, 2 to 6:30, right here on The Fan. Because we're up against it, I want to get this ridiculous call in real quick. DMV, introduce yourselves to Jimmy from Silver Spring, who wants to do what?
Hey, man, first of all, everybody, I've been calling and talking to 980 and 106.7 and 105.7 in Baltimore long before you were born, brother. Long before you were born.
What does that have to do with
it? Well, you're talking. I'm just saying you want to introduce me to somebody. That's what you said. You introducing me.
I'm introducing you to our listening audience here tonight, Jimmy.
Hold on, bro. What I'm telling you, what I told your producer, is my exact words were, if the Cleveland Browns called and said, we'll give you Myles Garrett for two number ones and Terry McLaurin.
And?
I told him, hold on, man. Let me finish. I told him that most people would say, oh, no, scary Terry in the deal. Bro, what I told your producer and what I'm telling you, I just heard you and Grant Foster talk about big fish. Two number ones and Terry McLaurin to get Myles Garrett and to echo Grant Paulson, y'all think JD5 is the next thing since Jesus Christ. He can make receivers better. He can make somebody else's number one target just like he made Terry McLaurin the number one target. You talk about big fish, you talk about bettering your team, you talk about getting a big fish, that's what it would take. All right,
so now
I'll listen to you, bro.
No, I think that's, you know what, it doesn't sound as crazy as it sounds on its surface. And I'll raise you this, Jimmy. I call the top four quarterbacks in the NFL the four horsemen, right? Lamar, Burrow, Josh Allen, Pat Mahomes. Out of those four guys, Lamar Jackson, and I guess you can't even consider Lamar, all of them have had a number one target throughout their career. Travis Kelce and
Lamar Jackson had number one target. Lamar Jackson's number one target has been Mark Andrews. Pat Mahomes' number one target has been Travis Kelce.
So what is your point? If you give away Terry McLaurin, who is your number one target? I get it, right? If you're going to give away Terry.
How easy is it to draft and develop, Jimmy? The point is Myles Garrett a better football player than Terry McLaurin?
You're damn right he is. 7 days out of the week and twice on Sundays.
So you're willing to give up two number ones.
And Terry, though, Jimmy, that's a lot.
The sticking point would be Terry McLaurin, who to me is overhyped.
How?
But you guys,
Jimmy.
But you.
Whatever you pouring up on this Friday night, pour me up a glass, brother.
Hey, Terry McLaurin had a great year this year.
Why did he have a great year, Jimmy? Because he finally had a damn quarterback.
Man.
1-800-636-1067. Final hour of power comes your way next. Good God.